Well, good morning. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE, if we have never met before, and we are so incredibly excited that you have chosen to join us as we embark on part two of this four-week journey called At the Movies. And if today is your very first time here, there is good news. This series is somewhat unlike any other series that we do around here. You see, we believe that every single one of our series is relevant and powerful to our lives, but every other series typically takes this form. We are forming this puzzle along the course of our series, and every week there is a new piece that fits into the puzzle until we reach the end of the series and the puzzle is completed. Well, and At the Movies, every single week is a new puzzle that is being created. It's a new puzzle that is presented, a new journey, a new movie. And so because of that, we believe with all of our hearts that today in part two, you are not here by accident. And we could not be more excited about that. So what's this series all about? You see, we believe with all of our hearts that we have a God who is in the business of taking the things that we love about culture and relating them to powerful truth in our lives that impacts our present and our futures for the better. And what thing in our lives and in our culture do we love more than movies? You see, there's just something powerful about going to the movies. It doesn't matter if we're catching a new release on Amazon Prime or Netflix from the comfort of our couch, or whether we're venturing out to the theater to sniff a little bit of the intoxicating $8 popcorn, or to catch an incredible story being presented on a larger-than-life 50-foot movie screen. There is just something deep down in all of us that has a special place for movies in our hearts. And maybe, just maybe, that special place is created from here. That we love the movies because there's just something about the storylines that sucks us in. Every great movie we've ever watched has told a story about the world in which we live in being redeemed. And it gives us hope and a belief that better is possible. And what's crazy and what's even more captivating is this, is the world is being redeemed in those incredible storylines through seemingly normal people just like us. Normal people who take risks into the unknown. Normal people who love others in a way that we have never loved others. Normal people who step out of their comfort zone and save the world or save a life. And deep down, the reason that that's so captivating is this. We would all love to have a storyline that's similar to that, right? Deep down, every single one of us wants to be the hero of a story. Deep down, every single one of us wants to be the catalyst for a turnaround story. Deep down, every single one of us wants to love someone the way those main characters on the movie screen love someone. Deep down, we all want to impact the world. Deep down, we all want to change lives. And throughout this series, here's the good news that we want you to understand. A cinematic storyline is possible in your life. But how? We all want to live out stories like what we see on the big screens. That's what's so captivating and mesmerizing. And that's why it's so incredible to be swept away for 2 hours of our time into a different world. Because somewhere down deep in us, we want our world to look like that world. We want to be the character that's at the center of the world change that is happening. But how do we make that happen? See, over 2,000 years ago, there was a man who walked onto the scene of history. And he presented this tactic, maybe more than presented, he lived out this tactic that had the potential to change the world, that had the potential to turn around stories, that had the potential to impact lives, that had the potential to make you the hero, the one who changes the city, the family, the workplace, and the world around you. And the tactic in which he enacted that brought about such change was this one thing called mercy. And for thousands of years and millions of stories, that same tactic has been put into use to change countless lives. That same tactic is one that you and I are being called to. And yet there is a tension that exists when we throw out the word mercy. The tension is this. Is that we live in a world in which that seems like a foreign concept, right? The word mercy brings negative connotations of weakness, That somehow we are lowering ourselves beneath others. And we are called to live a life that's all about getting ours, right? That's all about number one. That's all about me getting what's best for me. And what we fail to acknowledge is that when we buy into that and we drink the Kool-Aid, that this life is all about me getting mine, what ends up happening is we just create more problems within our world, right? If we got honest enough and looked close enough, when we look out for me first at every turn, it's just adding to the separation and the division and the hatred within our world. It's just introducing more problems into our relationships and into our stories. And you see, the reality that we struggle with is that because this is such a foreign concept in the world and the environment in which we live, we don't even really fully understand or grasp what mercy is. Like, what is mercy supposed to look like? And if it isn't weakness and if it has the power to change the world around me, then please help me understand what mercy really is. And this morning, I thought it was only fitting that as we introduce this tactic that can change the world and make your life a part of a cinematic storyline, as we introduce this movie, Just Mercy, for us to get a firm grasp of what this word really means and what God intended in our lives if we consider ourselves to be Christ followers. You see, here is the definition of mercy. Check this out. Mercy is a compassion or forgiveness shown towards someone whom it is within one's power to harm or ignore. Mercy is a mission performed out of a desire to relieve suffering, motivated by compassion. You see, every great cinematic storyline and every great life lived on earth involves what is summed up at the end: action driven by compassion. That is what mercy is: action driven by compassion. And for those of us who consider ourselves to be Christ followers, the best model of how this is to be lived out was given to us by Jesus. The best model of showing Jesus to our world in forms of grace and mercy are when we follow his example, or when we follow his lead. You see, here's the good news. If you're sitting there this morning and you consider yourself not to be a Christ follower, you don't have a relationship with Jesus, the good news is this. You simply get to sit back and judge us who consider ourselves to be Christ followers in this way. But for those of us who are following Christ, we are called to live out this definition each and every day. But for so long, as we enter into this faith journey, this relationship with Christ, this thing called religion, we have this skewed perception that religion is somehow defined by what we accomplish or what we become. And there was this guy named James. He was actually the brother of Jesus. If you know nothing about James, here's what's so incredible. 33 years he spent with the Son of God, did not believe he was the Son of God. All right, y'all understand if you have siblings, like, there ain't no way my brother is proving to me that he's actually the Son of God. That was James. But then one day, this brother of his, who surely was not the Son of God, raised from the dead. And it changed everything. It changed James' life and his perspective and his mission in life. And on the heels of that, he writes this letter that begins to define what religion, what Christianity, what following this guy named Jesus really entails and what it's really supposed to look like. And this morning, we are going to pick up that letter, and it's where we're going to start in the book of James, chapter 1. We're going to bounce around a little bit, and so this is a perfect opportunity for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in, and if you flip past that yellow game page, you'll find a notes page in there that we've created specifically for you. It'll help you follow along as we move through the text. You can even grab a pen and fill in the blank of some truths that you can hang on to as you struggle with this thing called mercy in the days and the weeks to come in your life and in our world. But here is what James begins to lay out. This is what religion, this is what Christianity, this is what following Jesus is really supposed to look like. And this is one of my favorite passages. This is so incredibly powerful and to the point. This is what James writes. In verse 27, he says, pure and genuine religion, like the real stuff, pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you. You see, for so long, we've been led to believe that religion is simply about achieving something. Religion is about us reaching some level of perfection, or us getting our lives together well enough that we are finally worthy of being called a Christ follower. But James paints a different picture. He says Christianity, true religion, it isn't about following or achieving something. True religion is about extending something. It's about giving something away in our lives. It's about the ability to see value and worth in the eyes of every other human being you come in contact with, regardless of race, socioeconomic status, party affiliation, or past transgressions and mistakes. That's what we are being called to. To be able to extend something to someone in our lives, regardless of the value and the worth that the world around us gives to them. See, in our lives, that becomes difficult. And it has been difficult for thousands of years. You and I are not the first human beings to struggle with this concept of mercy. But when it happens, it begins to change the world in radical ways. We see that very thing come to fruition in Just Mercy. If you haven't seen this movie, it is predicated around two main characters. Johnny D, is his nickname, is the man who has been wrongly convicted of murder and sentenced to death. He finds himself on death row. And the lawyer that comes to assist him and give him legal assistance is a guy by the name of Brian Stevenson. And as they meet each other, and Brian begins to start this journey called the Equal Justice Initiative, he ventures into the backwoods of Alabama to start a nonprofit to give legal assistance and a chance at justice to those who are furthest down in the system. And this nonprofit is predicated on it being at no cost to the family of the incarcerated. And he has a deep heart for those who are on death row. As he begins to meet man after man and have meetings with them, what he begins to find is that every other lawyer that has ever assisted them has always looked at these men in the eye and made this claim: that because of the mistakes that you have made, you are just too far gone. You don't have a whole lot of value. You don't have a whole lot of worth. You're not worth a whole lot of my time. And you just need to accept your sentence, and you just need to wait for them to set your execution date. That's about all we can do, is we can try to delay that or hope for a delay as long as we possibly can. And then Brian Stevenson comes along, and he begins to sit across from these men, and he hears their stories and their lives and their past mistakes. And he begins to see something different, that regardless of race or socioeconomic status or past, that there is value and worth in each and every one of them. And the first man that he sits down with is the guy who is right next to Johnny D, in the cell right beside him. And this man, much unlike most of the rest, confesses, "Man, this is something that I did. I killed the girl. I'm guilty of it. I didn't mean to kill her, but I made the bomb." And he was a Vietnam veteran who suffered from PTSD. And because of that, every other lawyer had just told him, "Man, just hope that we can put off your execution date as long as possible, but that's all we're willing to do. You're not worth much more of our time." And as Brian encounters this meeting with him, and he sits across the table and looks this man in the eye, this is what he sees, and this is the response that he gives. Check this out. Whatever you did, your life is still meaningful. There is still value and worth in you that I can see, regardless of what your past says. But deep down inside of all of us, there is this tension that exists that keeps us from seeing people and the value and worth in people that we are called to see in them. And that one thing is this: That for every single one of us, we have this tendency to attach a value system, to create a value system and attach it to every person we come in contact with. For all of us, our value system is different. But our value system works in such a way that your worth, your value, whether or not you are worth my time, my mercy, my grace, my forgiveness, is deemed by who you are, what I've experienced in my encounters with you, or what you have done in your past. And time after time, as we assess that value system and we begin relationships with people or we have encounters with people, we use that value system as a crutch in our lives, a crutch to keep us from getting hurt. That if I withhold grace and mercy and my time and forgiveness, somehow it keeps me in the place of dominance. It keeps me in the place of power. It keeps me from getting hurt, because if I extend this to you and then you don't utilize it correctly, then somehow it makes me feel less than. But somewhere along the way, we are called to rid ourselves of that value system. To stop viewing grace and mercy as a right that we have. For those of us who are Christ followers, so much of our lives and our mentality has been this: I have rights. They're my rights. I have rights. Well, guess what? When it comes to grace and mercy, that right was something that you relinquished. Because what we must realize, this truth, this hurdle that we must first get over, is we must realize that grace and mercy are a gift that was given to us. And that gift strips us of our right to not offer them to others. We were given a gift that we did not deserve. And because of that, it strips us of our right to not offer that gift to other people. Paul encountered this when he wrote a letter to the church in Ephesus, as they were struggling with, man, how do we interact with the Roman world around us that seems to be running away from Jesus and running away from the church and making poor decisions and has a checkered past? How do we extend grace and mercy to them? And Paul says, you want to know how you take the first step towards grace and mercy? You must recognize this truth. And he writes this in his letter. In Ephesians chapter 2, he says, but God is so rich in mercy and he loved us so much that even though we were dead because of our sins, even though we were broken, even though we were impoverished, even though we weren't perfect, even though we were undeserving, he gave us life when he raised Christ from the dead. It is only by God's grace that you have been saved. You see, the minute you accept that gift, you forfeit your right. Hello. The minute you accept that gift, you and I are challenged to forfeit our value and our ranking system that we use to deem whether or not that person is worthy of mercy and grace and forgiveness and an investment from us into their life and their situation. You are being called to change the world like Christ, but the only way to change the world like Christ is to be willing to offer mercy and grace like Christ offered it. And let's just be clear, this calling will be a challenge. Extending grace and mercy will not be easy. There will be many days in which doing so will not feel natural. But the only way for us to get over the hurdles and be able to extend mercy and grace in a world that desperately needs it. Can I get an amen? Do we not live in a country and find ourselves in the midst of an environment where our world desperately needs mercy and grace and something different brought to the table from the local church? The only way in which we will get over the hurdles and the difficulties that come with mercy and grace is to first acknowledge what the hurdles are. Mercy and grace will always demand something of us. It will always require something of us. And we must see the difficulty of what is required to be able to get past those and offer grace and mercy in the form that Christ is calling us to live out a cinematic story that changes the world. And so what does it require? What will it demand of us? You see, the first hurdle is this. The challenging call of mercy is that mercy will always require a first step of humility. Yikes. In order to offer mercy and grace, it will first come by being mature enough to humble ourselves. That same guy, Paul, different letter, different church, offers this advice to the church in Philippi in Philippians chapter 2. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You see, mercy requires a recognition that we are all broken in different ways. And for those of us, if you're anything like me, I'll just admit how broken I really am. Our tendency, for those of us who have been in the church for a while, is to begin to believe that we are all broken to different degrees. Like, yeah, I'm broken, but there's people who are a whole lot more broken than me. Guess what? That's not how this thing works. We are not all broken to different degrees. We are just all broken in different shapes. What shape are you broken in? Until you recognize that, and you recognize that the only reason you and I have been pulled out of our despair is because someone willingly pulled us out of it, we will never be able to fully offer the grace that we are called to offer. There's this moment where Johnny D begins to ask his lawyer, Brian, "Man, you know all of my story, but I don't know this one question that is so paramount. Why are you doing this? Why are you giving me mercy? Why are you giving me grace? Why are you giving me your time? Why are you giving me your investment? Every other lawyer I have ever encountered has written me off and told me that I am not worth it, has told me that I am too far gone, has told me that my past and my conviction makes me not worth their time. But here you come and you're offering something different. Why?" And as he asks that question, he gets this incredible response. Check this out.
"You know, you have a long time. You got your time back. I don't know about you, though. Would you like not to have it at all? Why are you doing this? Why am I good? I don't know. Why is you going down here? I'm gonna take these kids. There ain't nobody gonna pay you for it.
I know what it's like to be in the shadows. I've been broken. I've been hurt. I felt pain. I'm not perfect. Admitting that requires humility. But admitting that also allows us to understand that when we step into other people's brokenness, when we step into the lives of the marginalized in our world and our country, it also allows us to understand that we are not the Savior. We are simply the repaired mess who points back to the repairman. But to offer mercy and grace to a world that desperately needs it, we must first be humble and recognize our own brokenness. Our own poverty. We are all impoverished in some area of our lives. Secondly, mercy will always require a sacrifice. Mercy requires you to do something to tangibly extend mercy and help. It will require a sacrifice of your comfort. It may require a sacrifice of our reputation. It may require a sacrifice of our finances. Most certainly, it will require a sacrifice of our time. You see, Jesus did just that. He sacrificed everything he could. And when Paul wrote this letter in Philippi and he said, don't be selfish, think of others above yourself, he continues in this way. Check this out in verse 5. You must have that same attitude of Christ Jesus. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. And this next part is powerful. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. I don't know about you, but you don't even have to attach the word divine in my life. It's like, I don't want to give up my privileges. I don't want to give up anything that I'm due or that I've worked hard for the sake of somebody else. Are you kidding me? But Christ took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Mercy will always require action for us to do something, for us to give something up, for us to sacrifice something. And for Brian, he understood this. He understood that to gain trust and to build a relationship, to build a bridge in the life of Johnny D, that there were sacrifices that needed to be made. And so he drove down the old dirt road. And unlike any other lawyer who had come before, he met with the family. And if you've ever seen the movie, you know it grew from just the immediate family into the extended family, into all the neighbors, into a large majority of the town, all crammed into this tiny little shack. And as Johnny D gets word that Brian, unlike any other lawyer, has chosen to meet with his family and hear them out and give them value and worth, this is his response. Check this out.
Good morning. Thanks for saying amen. I know the last time we met, things didn't go quite the way I just can't believe you met my friend. Drove down in dirt road, crammed up in the house, talked to all my people, said he's gonna try to fight for me. That means a lot. It meant a lot to me too. Many wanted me to give this to you.
Compassion always requires action. It is not compassion unless there is action attached to it. We must do something for others. We must tangibly do something to put them above us. That is what mercy really looks like. That is how mercy begins to build a bridge in the lives of other people. A bridge that is one day strong enough to bear the weight of truth. That shows them the truth of the love and the grace and the mercy of Jesus Christ. For those of you who have been around CORE for a while, you know that about 6 years ago, we had an opportunity to start a partnership with what's called a care point in Guatemala City. And our particular care point is one that is located in one of the most impoverished neighborhoods in Guatemala City. Now, Guatemala City is a giant city in the middle of a third world country, full of poverty and impoverished areas. And so being deemed La Terminal Market, being deemed one of the most impoverished places in the entire city is saying a lot. It paints a pretty clear picture for you of the amount of poverty that we are dealing with. And our care point is a centralized location that is focused on providing healthcare, schooling, clothing, physical needs to kids and families within that community. Many of you sponsor kids every single month within that care point. And what we never could have imagined was Krista and I, we've both been on missions trips before. We both know the impact that they can have, the difference that they can make in people's lives and our own hearts. But what we never could have imagined was this. We never could have imagined that in the moment, yes, the money meant something to these families. But we never could have imagined that when that money turned into flesh and blood and we hopped off of a plane and we walked into their lives and we walked into their huts and we walked into their poverty and we extended hugs and we extended hands and we extended listening ears and we wanted to get to know them, we never could have imagined the difference that was made. The way in which their viewpoint of Jesus Christ changed because of the sacrifice that was made on our part. One of our favorite opportunities year after year, one of the little boys that we sponsor, his name is Frankel. Frankel has two younger siblings, Aiden and Anna. Every single time that we go, we make it a point like we have got to find mom. And sitting around talking with mom and the tears that are shed and the absolute gratitude that she shows. And she is absolutely blown away year after year. You came back. You came back again. You sacrificed your time. The money's one thing. Yeah. But you sacrificed your life, your schedule, your time to come be a part of mine. And the difference that's been made, not just in her life, but in her eternity, because of those sacrifices, are opportunities that you and I have on a daily basis. We overlook them because they're not in some impoverished third world nation. The person sitting next to you in your office, the person on the line next to you in your factory, they are waiting for you to step into their lives and their brokenness and their hurt that they are walking through because their wife has just been diagnosed with cancer. Because they've been marginalized by your company or by society. Because they're waiting on someone to be willing to stand for them when no one else will. Are we willing to sacrifice for the sake of our world, for the betterment of other people? Mercy requires sacrifice. And then third, mercy will always require active and constant searching. See, what I recognize about Ben Carver, and maybe you guys fall into the same boat, I like to be comfortable. Anybody else? Right? We all like to be comfortable. And the way in which we stay comfortable in a hurting and broken world is if we just stop looking for hurt and brokenness. Because we believe if I just don't see it, then I don't have to do anything about it. I didn't know it was there. That's my excuse. That's my justification. And I think sometimes God is looking back at us and saying, yeah, you did have something to do. Actively look for it. Don't just ignore that it's there just for the sake of your comfort. We should be putting ourselves in places and positions to see the brokenness. Are we willing to venture into the poorest parts of our city? Are we willing to venture into the poorest parts of our world? Jesus, when he was here on this earth, he told this incredibly powerful parable that lays out this calling on your and I's life, that we should be looking for hurt to serve. He writes this in Matthew chapter 25. This is such a great story. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me." Then these righteous ones will say, and in parentheses it should say, with an absolute look of confusion, "Lord, when did we ever see you hungry or feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality? Or naked and give you clothing?" And this is when Jesus drops the hammer. And the king will say, "I tell you the truth. When you did it to one of the least of these, you were doing it to me." When's the last time we've done something for someone who the rest of the world deems as less than or the least of these? Because when we do, we are serving Christ in that endeavor. Compassion compels us to open our eyes and start seeing the hurt and the broken and the marginalized in our world. And then lastly, mercy will always require courage. Like deep down, if you've ever thought that caring for people was a role that was saved for those special people who are so tender-hearted, you could not be more wrong. Because caring for others and extending mercy and grace and forgiveness will be one of the most difficult things you will ever do. It is a task, a calling that is reserved for the bravest of souls. Because something In light of the mercy that's extended, something will be taken from us. Something will be demanded from us. It will be a long uphill journey in offering this to the world around us. And oftentimes, we will be confronted with the temptation to just throw in the towel, just do life like everybody else. We see that very thing from one of Johnny D's very good friends in this movie. He has a testimony that could overturn the conviction, that could play a central role in Johnny D being taken off death row. And he agrees and signs the paperwork to present that testimony. And as soon as he does it, he begins to feel the backlash from the authorities and the community around him. As he begins to feel just how hard it is to give up something of himself for the betterment of someone else, he has this response. Check this out.
Bad what they're doing to John D. But I'm just trying to survive. I can't fight these guys. I want to find somebody else. It's done. Oh, John D. Okay. You must fail. They need you.
Whether we want to admit it or not, every single one of us have felt that pull. Maybe for many of us, we've given in to that pull more times than what we would like to admit. But I'm just trying to survive. And I look at the world around me and nobody else is taking these steps. No one else is offering mercy. No one else is offering grace. No one else is trying to help the marginalized. Everybody else is just trying to get theirs. And so maybe that's the easiest route for me. But the question I have is this: is just trying to survive really the script that you want for your life? Is that really the legacy that you want to leave? Is that really the message you want to convey in the life of your kids or your grandkids? Is that really the marriage that you want to have? I'm just trying to survive. And so I'm just going to keep getting mine. Or are we willing to buck the system? Are we willing to be different than the rest of the world and say, I know everybody else is playing favorites. I know everybody else is staying in their comfort zone. I know everybody else is ignoring the marginalized, but I am not willing to do that because mercy was extended to me. We come full circle. That same guy, James, he writes this. But if you favor some people over others, you're committing a sin. You're guilty of breaking the law, and there will be no mercy for those who have not shown mercy to others. Wow. You want to live a life of impact and make a difference? Show mercy. You want to change the world? Show mercy. But to do that, we have to put away the lie that the world is telling us and begin to understand this truth, that mercy and grace and forgiveness and help and care, they do not minimize us. That you and I are actually maximized. Mercy maximizes our worth when we get over the lie that the world is telling us that it actually minimizes our worth. You see, in a culture overrun with pride, we've been led to believe that if you don't get yours and look out for yourself, that it somehow places you beneath and less than everybody else. That just isn't true. Let's get rid of that. Let's begin to understand that our Heavenly Father has a design for your life and the mercy and the grace and the forgiveness that you show. And when we do that, He wants to maximize us. He wants to give us the best life possible. He wants to allow us to make the greatest impact on this world, impact like many, like very few are making in this world. And He sets that example in what He did for Jesus. When Christ was willing to sacrifice and extend mercy and grace, this is what God gave to him. Therefore, God elevated him to the place of highest honor and gave him the name above all other names. It's the very reason that Jesus gives us this insight, this instruction. In Matthew chapter 20, you're called to be different. Not so with you. Don't live like the rest of the world. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So the question that remains is this. When's the last time you've given of yourself for the sake of someone else? Seriously. Because that's the gospel. But the way to do that is to recognize that I need mercy. I need grace. And if we want to change the world, we must change our tactics. It's what Brian begins to recognize, and maybe the most powerful scene of the movie. As he's come through all of this, and he's sitting before Congress, he's sitting before the Senate, talking about the mercy and the grace that our world desperately needs, he gives this incredible insight. Check this out.
Our system has taken more away from this innocent man than it has the power to give back. But I believe if each of us can follow this lead, we can change this world for the better. If we can look at ourselves closely and honestly, I believe we will see that we all need justice. We all need mercy. And perhaps we all need some measure of unmerited grace. Thank you.
We all need mercy. We all need unmerited grace. But who will give it? Will you? Will I? See, mercy is the uncommon step that our world, that our country desperately needs. And this is our time. Mercy can begin now. And the script of your life and the lives around you can change for forever because of it. Will you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, above all else, we thank you for the mercy and the grace that you have given us that we don't deserve. God, may we be people who don't just accept that gift and feel like it gives us a right now to determine who gets mercy and grace and forgiveness and time from our lives. May we understand that because of that gift, we've relinquished our rights. And we have been called to extend that mercy and that grace into a world around us who desperately needs us. To seek out the marginalized. the ones that our country and our world have deemed less than. And to recognize that compassion always requires action. God, this morning, may we have the courage to do something. And furthermore, may we have the courage to let go of our value and ranking system as we look at others and simply see them through your eyes. It's in your name that I pray.